And we're holding Chess Zion Amud Beis, the third line of the widest lines. Continuing with Darshan Psukim from the Megillah, the Pasuk says that after Mordechai comes out, Vilavush Malchus, etc., the Jewish people had light and happiness and gladness and honor. Amud of Yehuda, so Yehuda said, besides the simple meaning of those words, Oda Zu Torda, when it says they have light, refers to Torah. And the point is, Marashah says, because the word, usually the word would be or in masculine. So therefore, because we're referring it to Torah, which is a feminine noun, therefore it changes that to Ora. As we find that the Torah is that the mitzvah is compared to a lamp, and the Torah is compared to the light of the lamp. Simcha ze yamtiv, when it says they had simcha, that refers to the fact that they had yamtiv. As the pasuk says, you should be happy on Yom Tovim. Now, when we say they had yamtiv, when we said they had all these things, on one level, what it means is that these were all things that Haman would have taken away from them. Well, of course, Haman would have killed them altogether, chas v'shalom, and then they wouldn't have had any of those things. But in particular, Marsha says, for example, that Haman had it in for these mitzvahs because they're the things that show the connection between us and Hashem, and he wanted to break that. Different other mafoshim talk about that these are ones that show the where the Jewish people have tremendous simcha during them, and he wanted to break that. So therefore, now that Haman's decree was over, now they were able to have these things in the fullest sense again. In particular, as far as Yom Tov, actually, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the people were ready to accept on themselves that Purim should actually be a Yom Tov or Sebastias Malacha. The Chacham didn't approve of that, which is why Purim is Mutar Bastias Malacha, but that's another meaning of what we're saying over here when it says they had Yom Tov. Sosa in Zumila, when it says that they had Sosa in gladness, that refers to Mila. As we find that Sosan is said in connection with Imrosecha, your word. So Rashi explained that Bris Mila can be referred to as your word because Hashem introduces it with the words Vayomer Hashem rather than many other mitzvahs. Most other mitzvahs are introduced with Vaydaber. Rashi also mentions that when David HaMelech himself says Sosan Echi Alem Asecha, he's referring to the fact that Gemara tells a story where one time he was in the bathhouse and was concerned. He's completely bare of mitzvahs until he realized he always has the Bris Mila with him, and then he was happy about that. So that's Sosan Echi Alem Asecha on your word. So therefore, Bris Mila is called your word. Rashi elsewhere in Shabbos explains another reason why Mila is called Imrasecha, because the first mitzvah that was given to the yet to be formed Jewish people. So like at that point, it was like the only saying, the only statement that Hashem had made to Avraham of what he should do. Anyway, so they had that. Bikor Elu Tefillin, and when it says they had glory or honor, this refers to Tefillin. V'cheinu Omer, V'ro Kalam Ha'aretz K'shem Hashem Nikra Alecha. All the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is called on you, V'yoro Mimecha, and they'll be afraid of you. V'tanya, Rabbi Yazar God Olema, Eva Tefillin Shabarosh, that refers to the Tefillin on the head, particularly those, because they have the shin of Hashem's name. So all these things, again, either it's that all of these are associated with a bris between the Jewish people and Hashem, and Haman wanted to break that, or because they're all associated with simcha and honor that the Jewish people have, and Haman wanted to break that. So therefore, so now that he was broken instead, then we have all these things in much greater measure. Next, the Psukim go on to list the 10 sons of Haman, the Esparshandos of Agomer, Aseres Bnei Haman. So now a halacha in that connection. Omer of Adu de Min Yafoi, Aseres Bnei Haman, va Aseres Tzarech Lemen Mirna Bnei Shima Achas. The names of the 10 sons of Haman, plus the word Aseres at the end, all have to be said in one breath. My timer, Kula Bahadi Adori, Nafku Nishmasaihu, because all of their souls left them, they all died at the same time. A different mafoshim talk about what's actually going on over here. Is it that they were all killed in the battle at the same time, and then Esther asked permission from Ahasuerus to display the bodies on the gallows, or is it that they were actually executed by hanging? So therefore, they were all hanged on the gallows at the same time, and they all died at the same time. Either way, the idea is, in other words, that Marashah says, given that the Pasuk lists them name by name, you would think they were killed or died at different times. Therefore, we're stressing over here that no, they actually all died at the same time. And therefore, in token of that, we say all the names in the same breath. Tosfos mentions that if you didn't do that, then b'dieved you're yotze, and that is in fact the halacha. So l'chatchila the Baal Kodeh tries to say them all in one breath, but if he can't, then you're still yotze. There is an interesting idea, though. Like this, we have everybody says the Aseres B'nei Haman to themselves. Now, where does that come from? On the face of it, you have, we say that everybody says the Psukei Geula to themselves, Ish Yehudi, and Mordechai Yotzim L'fnei HaMelech, and so forth. But why this one? There's an explanation from the Rogatchover that since you have this Chiyuv to say it all in one breath, so you can be Yotze with the Baal Kodeh laning, but you can't be Yotze with him laning all in one breath. You have to do it for yourself. Therefore, that's why there's the minhag that everybody says it for themselves. Now, they themselves don't necessarily say it all in one breath either, but at any rate, that's the idea, says the Rogatchover, behind that minhag. Amar Rav Yochanan, another din in connection with the 10 sons of Haman, Vav de Vaizasa, the Vav of the name of the 10th son, Vaizasa, Tzarech l'mimtechei b'skifa, you have to stretch it out vertically, with length, kemudia de Libris, like the oar that they use in Libris. Libris is the name of a river. When a ship is going down that river, there were all kinds of underwater rocks and snags and whatever. So what you would do is you'd have a long pole that you'd use to push the boat away from those underwater hazards. So that pole was called a mudia. So the vav has to be as long and as prominent as the mudia of Liverus. My timer, why? Kula b'chad skifa is dikhifu, because all of them were hanged on the same gallows. The Targum on Gilas Esther, in fact, gives the details. It says over there you have 50 amos to work with. So you have Haman was hanged in 3 amos, and then underneath him Parshandasa in the next 3 amos, and a space, and then Dalfa in the next 3 amos, and then a space between him and the next one. So altogether, all 10, all 11 of their bodies took up the entire gallows. So in token of that, the Vav of Vaizasa has to be extended. Now, what do we mean extended? There are 3 explanations among the Rishonim. The Rosh brings an explanation that it means it's written larger than normal, which is in fact how we have it in our Megillahs. The Ran brings an explanation that it means that you have to make the head of it vertical, like this. You look at a regular Vav, you have a horizontal head, and then you have coming down from it a vertical body. So now, with this Vav, instead, the vote would be that you write it as if it was just as just one long thing going vertically without any horizontal component. We don't do that nowadays. And then there's a 3rd explanation that a number of the Rishonim bring, that it means that you should extend the reading a bit. You should say Vaizasa, like with the Vav longer than normal. The Lamaisa, everybody writes the Vav large. I don't know of anybody who does either of the other 2 things. Omer Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorash Rav Shila Ish Kfar Tumarta. In this connection, by the way, about the long Vav and Mudia Deliverus, there's a long explanation from Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, that explains the whole thing of Kabbalah, what Livrus represents, that it represents the river of Malchus and Amoichin de Katnus, and Mordechai was able to pass over that, which is why we said the other day that Mordechai passed over the body of water separating the palace area from the rest of Shushan, and he's the Mudio who prevents the Jewish people from getting caught on the various underwater snags and problems over there, and therefore in token of that, we have to extend out the letter. He has a whole long explanation. I'll be Kabbalah of the exact details of that. Anyway, Omer Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorash Rav Shila Ish Kfar Tumarta, Kol Ashiras Kulan, all the Shiras in the Torah, Nichtovis Ariach Al Gabi Levena, or Levena Al Gabi Ariach. They are written, and Ariach is a half brick, a Levena is a brick, so they're written in an overlapping style, like the way a brick building is built. So the Ariach, not over here, but in other places in Shas, Tosfos discusses what exactly is the Ariach and what is the Levena. So is it that the Ariach represents the writing and the Levena represents the spaces between the writing? Or is it that the Ariach and Levena both represent the writing, but you have half lines and you have lines? But like, for example, you look at the way Oz Yashir is written in the Sefer Torah, it's written like that, where you have the alternate lines are divided into 2 segments and 3 segments. So it's built like a brick wall, sort of, where you have on each line The two segments are overlapping over the space, or they sit above the spaces between the three segments, and so forth. Chutz mishirazu, so with the exception of this shira, of the 10 sons of Haman, which is written in the style of a shira, or Malchiknan, and the list of the 31 nation of the 31 kings of Canaan that Yeshua conquered and defeated, which are also written in that style, like the 10 sons of Haman. There you have a half brick on a half brick and a brick on a brick. So again, that can mean that you have the short words stacked vertically above one another, which are the arichim. Like in the 10 sons of Haman, you have the S's stacked one on top of the other, and then you have the levena would be the longer words such as parshandosa, dalfa, and etc. In a stack. Or it can mean that the words themselves count as the arichim, and the space between them, the space between the word pashandosa and ve'es, and between dalfan and ve'es, and so forth, is the levena, is the whole brick. Whatever the case, you have them written like that. My timer, shaloitet kumulam apaltan, to represent the idea that there will be no standing up again after their fall. In other words, a building that's built like the shiras, like the way the shiras ayam is laid out, is stable. The bricks will stay in place. But a building that's built the way you write the sons of Haman, if you were to build a building like that, it would collapse very easily because it doesn't have any stability, and then you wouldn't be able to build it again. So the same way we write the sons of Haman in that style in order to represent that concept, they fell, they're never going to get up again. Marsha, as well as a couple of the Rishonim, point out that also Shiras Hazinu is written in that style also, and the answer is Hazinu also talks about the downfall of the Rishonim. At the end of there, at the end of Shiras Hazinu, it talks about how Hashem is going to defeat and punish all the Goyim who harassed and persecuted the Jewish people over all the years. So therefore, that Shira is also written in that style. Okay. Next, so after they finish killing their enemies in Shushan on the 13th, as well as the 10 sons of Haman, the pasuk is Vayomer Hamelech LeEsther Hamalka. The king says to Esther Hamalka, the Shushan Abira Horugu Ayehudim. In Shushan Abira, the Jews have killed 500 plus the 10 sons of Haman. So now, if you look at it, the first half of that pasuk sounds like Haman, sounds like Achashverosh is very upset. Look at this. Look how many people they killed. So he starts by saying what sounds like a very angry thing. Look at that! How dare they kill so many people? But then he continues in the rest of the pasuk, "Umashe losich v'inasin loch." What do you want me to ask? Well, ask for whatever you want, and I'll give it to you, etc. So, like, what changed? So, Amar Rabbo, Malamet Shabal Malach b'Sotre Apim. This teaches us that a malach came and slapped him on the mouth. So that's exactly it. He started by saying something in an angry tone of voice, like, what do you think you're doing, killing so many people? But then in the middle, Malach came and slapped him, and then he changed it, and then that forced him to change his mind, and he started speaking more gently and saying, so what else do you want me to do for you? Okay. Later on, the Pasuk says, Uvavoya lifnei hamelech, when she came before the king, when she, Queen Esther, came before the king, Omar, he said, Im HaSefer, with the written scroll, with the written document, then Haman's decree should be overturned. So what does that mean? Omar, Omra Mibari, like, if you're saying that she came and said it should be written, then it should say Omra. So Omar, Omra Rabbi Yechon, and it means Omra Loi. It means that Esther said to him, Ye Omra Bepeh Mashakosav BaSefer. Means she asked that it should be said verbally what was written in the document. Which means, so Rashi says, we're not girdus the words Omra Loi, Rashi says. What it means is, the psukim over there at the end, near the end of the Megillah are summarizing the story of the Megillah. So it's saying that the Jewish people accepted the Yom Tov of Purim because what was the cause of the Yom Tov? Because Haman ben Hamdasa HaAgogi wanted to destroy the Jewish people. Uvavoya lifnei HaMelech, and then when she came in front of the king, Omar, then he said, Ima Sefer, with the document, meaning the king said, we're going to write documents that are going to destroy his plan. Mordechai Kosev Allah, and Mordechai wrote to them that they should make Purim. So in other words, the Omar Ima Sefer is, we're saying that Mordechai set up for the Jewish people. Omar, he said that Ima Sefer, there should be a scroll, there should be a written scroll from which you're going to read this story every year. And Marsha points out that according to that, it comes out that all Gemara over here might fit with an opinion, which we're going to learn in the next parak, that you only need to hear the Megillah from the beginning of Haman's elevation, from the beginning of Perek Gimel. Now, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is you have to hear the whole Megillah from beginning to end, but we're going to see later on Daf Yud Tes or so, that there are different opinions how what point you have to hear from in order to be Yotze. So that's according to Rashi. The Ritzva says that whole thing is kind of a doiche. The Ritzva rather says that what it is Esther came to Achashverosh and asked for his permission that they should be able to establish a Yom Tov of Purim. After all, I mean, the Yom Tov is all about that Achashverosh planned, that Achashverosh agreed with Haman to wipe out the Jewish people, and then that Haman, who after all was the king's favorite, was hanged, etc. So she needed permission from Achashverosh that he should allow them to establish that Yom Tov without him feeling like they're doing it in order to make fun of him. And therefore, that's what it means that Omra loy, that she, so the Ritva is good, it's the word Omra loy. So he says it means that she said to Achashverosh, your Omra repair, let there be said verbally every year when we lay in the Megillah, Masha Kosava Sefer, what was written in these documents, and therefore that's Omar. He agreed that Ima Sefer, that you can have such a document and you can read it every year, and I want mine. Okay. The Pasuk finishes off over there that Esther and Mordechai wrote to the people Divrei Shalom ve'emes, words of peace and truth. So what's the point of mentioning truth? Amar Rav Tanchum, Va'amila, Amar Rav Asi, Melamed Shetzricha Sirtut Kamita Shel Torah. This teaches us that the Megillah requires Sirtut. You have to score lines on the parchment in order to write neatly, just like the truth of Torah. Now, what is the truth of Torah? Rashi says it means the Sefer Torah itself. A Sefer Torah, when you write it, you have to have Sirtut, you have those lines scored on the parchment to make sure that you write in straight line. So the Megillah requires that as well. Tosfos, in a number of places in Shas, disagrees with that and says that actually Minat Torah, Sefer Torah, does not require Sirtut. If the Sefer needs it in order to write neat lines, then of course he has to do it. But otherwise, Tosfos says, no, what does require Sirtut, Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, Tosfos says, is a mezuzah. So therefore, Amita Shel Torah over here refers to the mezuzah. A mezuzah contains the essential truths of the Torah, Shema Yisrael, and then we have to listen to Hashem's mitzvahs, and so forth. Therefore, it's called Amita Shel Torah. And so we're saying a Megillah has to have Sirtut the same way as that. Next, the Pasuk says over there, Umama Esther Kiyam, the word of Esther established. So what does that mean? Mama Esther Ein Divrei Atzomus Loi. Now, the previous Pasuk finishes off mentioning Divrei Atzomus V'Zakosam, the fast that the Jewish people fasted and their cries. And then it continues, Umama Esther Kiyam Divrei Purim Eila. The word of Esther confirmed these days of Purim. So what do we mean? It sounds like the Pasuk, since we have Umama Esther is the beginning of a Pasuk, it sounds like it's saying that only the word of Esther caused Purim to happen. So what does that mean? Only the word of Esther, only the fact that she went to Ahasuerus, Mama Esther ain't divrat somus loy. You're telling me the fast that they did, the 3-day fast, had nothing to do with it? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not what the pasuk means. The two psukim run together. When it finishes off, when the previous pasuk finishes, divrat somus v'zakosam, that's what it means. Divrat somus, the words of the fast, the fact that they fasted and davened to Hashem, plus Umama Esther, plus Esther's word that she went to Achashverosh and convinced him to eventually to overthrow Haman and cancel the Gzeira. All of that, all of that established these days of Purim. So it was both. There was the fasting of the Jewish people as well as the bravery of Esther in going to Achashverosh. Next, the last pasuk of the Megillah goes, Ki Mordechai Yehudi Mishnah Lamelech Achashverosh. Mordechai Yehudi was the second in command. He was the prime minister to King Achashverosh. The Gadol Yehudim, he was great among the Jewish people. The Rotzu L'Roiv Echav, and he was accepted by Roiv of his brothers. Now, the simple meaning, you could say Roiv means the many of his brothers, just like you have it earlier in the Megillah, the Roiv Bona by Haman. It doesn't mean most of his children, it means all of his children. It means the many of his children. But the Gemara is darshining over here, L'Roiv Echav V'Loi L'Chol Echav. When it says that he was accepted by the majority, Roiv can also mean majority, but he was accepted by the majority of his brothers, meaning not by all his brothers. Melamed Shepirshu Mimenu Mitzvah Sanhedrin, that teaches us that some of the members of the Sanhedrin withdrew from him because they felt that it's not right for him to be accepting the position as prime minister, which is going to take him away from teaching and learning Torah. So Mordechai himself felt that he needs this because on an ongoing basis, you could have, again, you know, we did learn before Achashverosh was a Rosha and he was also very fickle. And at any time, there might be new gzeiros proposed against the Jewish people, and he needs to be there in order to prevent those. But the other Chachamim, most of the Chachamim agreed with him on that. A minority of the Chachamim disagreed with that and said that Mordechai should not have done that, and therefore they separated themselves from him. Amr Rav Yosef, so in this connection, Rav Yosef says, Godol Talmud Torah, Yosef Matzolos Nefashos. We see that in a way, learning Torah is greater than saving lives. Now, we don't mean saving lives like, you know, you have Atzala going around doing the Pekuach Nefesh. We're not talking about that. We're talking about, again, a situation like this where there's not an immediate danger, but there's a potential danger in the future. So there's a potential danger. Nevertheless, Talmud Torah takes precedence over that. And we see that in the Ikra Choshev Leva Mordechai Bosa Dalad Ulvasaif Bosa Chamisha. We see that from the fact that when it lists the people who returned to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Mishmikdash, first it lists Mordechai after four other Chachamim and later on after five, implying that he went down a level. The Ikra Ksiv, because you have as follows in Sefer Ezra, Asheboim Zerubbabel, it lists the Chachamim who came together with Zerubbabel, who was the governor of the Yidden at the beginning of the second Mishmikdash. So the ones who came with him, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sroya, Re'eloya, Mordechai, Bilshan. Okay, Bilshan is a nickname for Mordechai because it means that he knew all the languages. But anyway, you see that there are four Chachamim mentioned before him. In other words, the Pashtus, we're assuming that it's listing them in the order of their caliber. So Yeshua was the greatest, then Nehemiah, then Sroya, then Re'eloya, and Mordechai is fifth on the list. Later on, in the Nehemiah portion of Sefer Ezra, it repeats this list. It repeats this whole document with a little with slightly different details, and it says Haboyim im Zerubbabel, the ones who came with Zerubbabel, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Ra'amya, Nachmoni, Mordechai, Bilshan. So there you see that you have five people listed ahead of him. So you see that he went down one level. So what happened? Now, the first list is when they first came, when Kodesh proclaimed that they can go rebuild the Beis Mikdash, and people came, 42,000 Jews came to rebuild the second Beis Mikdash. So Mordechai was among them. Now, what happened was, apparently, during the time when the work on the Beis Mikdash was stopped, as we learned a few days ago, then sometime during that period, Mordechai left Eretz Yisrael and went to Shushan, maybe in order to petition Achashverosh to allow them to continue the rebuilding. We don't know exactly, but whatever the case. So now it's listing again in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. A couple of decades later, it's giving the same list again, and now it has Mordechai one level down, showing that in all the years in between, which in the years in between that is when the Nes Purim happened, he had gone down one level, and therefore he's only listed sixth instead of fifth. So in other words, we see that to a certain extent that bears out the criticism that the Mikzas Echav had of him, that he's spending too much time on being prime minister and not enough on learning Torah. So we see from that that Talmud Torah is greater than Atzolos Nefashos. In this connection, Omar Rav, the Tamer of Shmuel Bar Marja, Godol Talmud Torah Yosim Abinian Beis Mikdash. We also see that learning Torah is greater than even building the Beis Mikdash. Because as long as Baruch ben Neriah was alive, Ezra did not leave him and come to Eretz Yisrael. What happened was Baruch ben Neriah was the Talmud of Yirmiyah HaNavi. He had gone into Golos in Babel. Ezra was saying was his Talmud. Now what happened was Ezra doesn't first show up into Eretz Yisrael until the seventh year of King Daryavash, which is about a year and a half after the second Beis Mikdash, after they'd finished building the second Beis Mikdash. Now, why is Ezra not there for the actual building of the Beis Mikdash, whether the first time with Kodesh or the second time when Daryavash gave permission to continue? We don't find Ezra there at all. We only find him coming after that. So the reason is because until then, he was learning Torah from his Rebbe, Baruch and Bavel, and therefore he considered that more important than coming to build the Beis Mikdash. Now, of course, the question is, why didn't Baruch himself come? So Marsha says, apparently what happened was Baruch passed away in the year when they began building the second Beis Mikdash, in the second year of Daryavash. Therefore, up until that point, Ezra couldn't leave. So Marsha doesn't explain in that case why Ezra waited until the seventh year to come. The Medrash says Bechlal that Baruch was very weak and sick. He wouldn't have been able to make the trip to Eretz Yisrael. He never would have survived it. Therefore, Ezra stayed with him until he passed away. The implication seems to be that he passed away only after they finished building the Beis Mikdash, and then at that point, Ezra started making his plans to come up. Also, Omer Rabba bar of Yitzchak, Omer Rabba, Omer of Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, Godol Talmud Torah Yosim the Kibud Av Ve'Em. Another point we see is Talmud Torah is even greater than doing Kibud Av Ve'Em, than being there to take care of your parents. Shekol Oisin Shanim Shor Yaakov Avinu Beveis Ever. We see that all the years, which we're going to say in a minute, that Yaakov was for 14 years in the yeshiva of Ever, Loi Nana. She wasn't punished for those. Meaning that, meaning in other words, so we know that Yaakov was away from home for many years. Later on, he was deprived of the company of Yosef for 22 years, from when Yosef was sold until they had their reunion in Mitzrayim. That was altogether 22 years. Now, Yaakov was away from when he left after the brachas until he returned. As the Gemara is now going to calculate, he was away from home for a total of 36 years, but he was only punished for 22 of them. So therefore, the other 14, he was living in yeshivas, ever, and therefore we don't count them towards, therefore we don't count them against him, and he wasn't punished by being deprived of Yosef for 36 years. So now we're going to calculate how we know that he was in yeshivas, ever, for 14 years. By the way, usually we call it yeshivas, shame, ever. But shame, actually, if you look at the figures in the psukim in Parshas Noach, it comes out that shame passed away when Yaakov was 50 years old. When he got the brachas, as we're going to say now in the Gemara, he was 63. So by the time he got the brachas and had to run away from home, shame had already been 30, had already passed away 13 years earlier. But Ava was still alive. And as we're going to say in the Gemara over here, Ava was still alive for a couple of years after Yaakov left the yeshiva. So the Amamar, so we learn in a Gemara in Yeromus, Lama Nimnu Shnoisav Shoy Yishmael, Rashi brings this also at the end of Parshas Toldos. Why does it mention the years of Yishmael? So it says the years of each of the others, but it also says that Yishmael lived 137 years. Why do we need that? After all, Rashi says Yishmael was a Rosha. Okay, Marsha says Yishmael did Tshuva, but still, he wasn't a tzaddik his whole life like the others. Why does he get to have the number of years that he lived mentioned in the Pasuk? The reason is Kedeli Yachas Ben Shnoisav Shoy Yaakov, in order that through that we can establish the years of Yaakov. So Dichtiv, it goes like this. Dichtiv, the Eila Shnei Chai Yishmael, it says that how long did Yishmael live? Ma'as Shana V'Shloishim Shana V'Sheva Shanim. He was 137 when he died. Now, Kama Koshish Yishmael MiYitzchak, how much older was Yishmael than Yitzchak? Abbeis HaShnein. He was 14 years older. Dichtiv, Avram Ben Shmoinim Shana V'Sheish Shanim, V'Ledes Hogeros Yishmael La'Avram. It says that Avram was 86 when Yishmael was born. Uchtiv, when Yitzchak was born, Avraham was 100. So that makes a difference of 14 years. Now, when Yaakov and Esav were born, it says Yitzchak was 60 years old. So, so at that point, when Yaakov is born, how old is Yishmael? He's 74, because again, Yitzchak is 60, and Yishmael is 14 years older than Yitzchak. So 60 and 14 makes 74. Kama Paishin Mishnei, how many years are left at that point of Yishmael's life? If you're saying he lived to 137, and at this point he's 74, so 137 minus 74, Shitinut Las, that leaves you 63. Vitanya, now we learn in a Braisa, Hoya Yaakov Avinu B'Shoshin is Baruch Me'aviv Ben Shishim B'Shalish Shana. That was how old Yaakov was when he got the brachas from his father. He was 63 years old. Uboy B'Perek Mes Yishmael. Around that time is when Yishmael died, and we know that Dichtiv Vayar Esav Kiberach Avimer. Esav saw that Yitzchak had blessed Yaakov and sent him off to Paddan Aram, etc. And the pasuk finishes off. The end of Parshas told us Vayelach Esav Al Yishmael. That Esav went to Yishmael by Yikach, and he married as Mochalas Bas Yishmael Achos Nevoyos. He married Mochalas. He had already two wives from Benoit's Canaan. Now he realized, you know what? Yitzchak and Rivka don't like Benoit's Canaan, so he didn't divorce his old wives, as Rashi says over there. Hosef Risha Al Risha. So he just added new Rishas to his Risha. But he figured, okay, you know what? I'm going to put myself back in their good graces by marrying somebody from within the family. So he went and then married Machlas, the daughter of Yishmael, Achos Nevoyos, the sister of Nevoyos. Now, why does it have to mention that she's the sister of Nevoyos? Nimash Mashinema Bas Yishmael, any Adeshi Achos Nevoyos. Don't we automatically know that? The Psukim at the end of Chayesara list the children of Yishmael, and the first one of them is Nevoyos. So we know that Nevoyos is a son of Yishmael, and therefore this Machlas is a daughter of Yishmael, necessarily is a sister of Nevoyos. So why does the Pasuk have to mention it? Melamed Shekidsha Yishmael, that teaches us that Yishmael accepted Kiddushin on her behalf, Umes, but then he died, V'hisia Nevoyos Achia, and then her brother Nevoyos had to marry her. So that shows, in other words, that Yishmael died around the same time, shortly after the brachas. Again, the sequence of events is Yaakov got the brachas. Esav is angry at him. So Yitzchak and Rivka tell Yaakov to run away to Haran. He does that. Esav sees everything that happened, how Yaakov got the brachas and was sent off to Paddan Aram to find a wife from the family and told Lesikach Ishim of Nos Knan. So Esav goes and marries a daughter of Yishmael. So we see that all these events happen one after the other. Therefore, we see Yishmael died at that time when Yitzchak and when Yaakov and Esav were 63. I had, by the way, a Rebbe in seventh grade, Reb Levi Bornstein, Zalzayin Gesund. He said maybe what happened was Yishmael, when he found out what kind of a son-in-law he's getting, then he had a heart attack and dropped dead. Anyway, so far that establishes that Yaakov was 63 when all of this happened, and Yishmael was 137, and that's when he died. Now, let's continue the rest of Yaakov's life. Shitin Utlas. So we have so far, but the pastures, it means he's 63 when he went to Haran. Then we know from there, from when he came to Haran, till Yosef was born, was 14 years, because 7 years he worked for Rachel, and then Lavan gave him Leah instead, and he worked another 7 years. And only after those 7 years are up, then Yaakov is ready to go. And he says to Lavan, let me go, and I'll return to my land. And the reason, because Yosef was born at that time. So far, that would bring us up to Hoshiv and Veshiva. So far, that brings us up to 77. Uchtiv, Yosef and Shloshim Shana Ba'omri Lifnei Paro. Next, the Pasuk tells us that when Yosef stood before Paro and was appointed prime minister, he was 30 years old. Ha'meya Veshiva. So that brings us up. So far, it sounds like Yaakov was 107 at that time. Shev de Shava, Shev de Sova, then you have the 7 years of plenty in Mitzrayim, the Tauti de Kafna, two of the famine before Yaakov and the family came, Homei of Ashitzar. That would bring us up to Yaakov at that point, it sounds like it was 116. Ochtiv, but it says in the Pasuk, Vayem Apare El Yaakov Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha, how long have you lived? Vayem Yaakov Apare Yemei Shnei Megura Shloshim Ma'as Shana. He says, I'm 130 years old. So what do you mean 130? May have a shitzer, Havian. Based on the calculation we just did, he was only 116. Therefore, we see from that the 14 years that he was in Aver's yeshiva don't count. So altogether, in other words, so now we have to readjust the calculation that we just did. Yaakov was 63 when he left home, but he didn't right away go to Haran. He went first to the yeshiva of Aver. Marsha, in fact, points out the yeshiva itself must have been located in Be'er Sheva. So thus, when he finally left the yeshiva, that justifies the Lashon HaPasuk, Vayetze Yaakov of Be'er Sheva Vayelech Harana. So he went and hid out there for 14 years. Then he went to Haran, spent 7 years working for Rachel's hand, and another seven for Rachel's hand. So that brings us up to when Yosef was born. Yaakov was 91, not 77 like we thought before. Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim. When he's 30, he becomes prime minister. At that point, Yaakov is 121. Then you have the 7 years of plenty and the 2 years of famine. That brings us up to 130, and now it fits with the Pesukim. So Tanya, in fact, we learn in the Braisa, Hoyo Yaakov Beveis Eva Mutman Abba Esra Shana. Yaakov was hiding and then learning Torah in the yeshiva of Eva for 14 years. Eva Mes Lachot Shere Yaakov Ben Aram Naharayim Shtei Shanim. Eva passed away 2 years after Yaakov Ben left for Aram Naharayim. That we can calculate from the Pesukim in Parashas Noyach. When you look over there, when Eva was born, and how long he lived. He lived 464 years and passed away. It comes out that he passed away in the year 2187 since creation. Yaakov, meanwhile, had left for Haran in the year 2185. So 2 years after Yaakov left, Ava passed away. Nimtzach she'omad al ha'be'er ben shivim v'shevim shana. So therefore, it comes out that when Yaakov stood by the well and first met Rachel, he was 77, 63 when he got the brachas, 14 years in Beis Eved. And the Gemara says, "Manolon d'loy mi'anash." So how do we know that in the end Yaakov was not punished for those 14 years in the yeshiva? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Nimtza Yosef Shapirish Ma'avim Esrim Ashtayim Shana. It comes out that Yosef had separated from his father for 22 years. Kashem Shapirish Yaakov Avinu Ma'aviv, the Yaakov Ma'aviv, just the same amount of time that Yaakov Avinu was separated from his father. So the question is, what do you mean? The Yaakov plus and Beshisa Havyan. If you look at it, Yaakov was away from home for 36 years. He left when he was 63, as we're saying. He returned when he was 99, because you have he spent 14 years in the yeshiva of Eber, another 14 years working for Leah and Rachel, another 6 years that he was working for Lavan in order to get sheep, and then another 2 years that he spent getting home, which the Gemara actually is going to point that out. Ella, our base of have a base Eber like Choshevahu. So we're not counting the 14 years that he spent in base Eber against him. Now the question becomes: so if the base Lavan Estrin Shnin Havyan in Lavan, he was only in Lavan's house for 20 years, and we know that because he actually says to Lavan at the end, in the confrontation over there, at the end of Parashat Vayetze, he says to Lavan, "Ze Estrim Shana, Zeli Estrim Shana Bebeisecha. I've spent 20 years in your household." So he's only there 20 years. Where do the other 2 years come in? Ela Mishum De'Ishtai Be'Urcha Tautin Shnin. The reason is because he spent 2 years on the road. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Yotzame Aram Naharayim. Now, what happened was Yaakov left Aram Naharayim, Uvola the Sukkos, he came to Sukkos, but also from Shmona Asa Chodesh. He ended up spending 18 months in Sukkos. Shenemar, the Yaakov Nosa Sukkosa, Yaakov traveled to Sukkos, by even like Boyas, he built himself a house, or Mekneu, also Sukkos, and for his cattle, for his animals, he made Sukkos. So now Sukkos is in plural, so therefore it means that he made two sets of Sukkos. When do you make sukkahs for the animals? In the wintertime, in the wintertime, it's too cold for them to be in sukkahs. You bring them into the houses. So therefore, the implication is that he built sukkahs one summer when he was there. Then the following winter, he built a bias, a house for himself and the family and the animals. And then the following summer, he again built sukkahs for the animals. So it comes out that he was there for 18 months, a summer, a winter, and another summer. Over here, Rashi is learning it from the fact that it says the word sukkos itself is plural. On the pasuk, Rashi seems to learn a little differently. The fact that it mentions sukkos twice in the pasuk. Whatever the case, he spent 18 months over there. Over Beisel, also shisha chadashim v'hikyub zvachim. In Beisel, he spent 6 months and he brought kobanis over there. So altogether, that adds up to 2 years. Now, to be sure, I mean, when we say he spent 6 months in Beisel, we don't mean that exclusively. The 6 months is Beisel as well as the rest of the time getting home. During that time is the story with Shechem and Dinah. During that time is the story with Reuben and when Rachel gave birth to Binyamin and passed away, and then when Reuben moved Yaakov's bed. All that took place during those remaining 6 months while they were getting from Beis El home. So we don't mean they spent six whole months in Beis El. We mean that part of that 6 months was there and part of it was getting home. Now, the question is, with all of this, I mean, the fact is, he ran away from home because Esav was angry at him and Rivka told him, you better get out of here for your safety. Why is he being punished for these years away anyway by being deprived of Yosef? So one point is that maybe after the 14 years in Beis Eber, he should have then checked whether things have calmed down. And instead, he went off to Haran, and therefore for that he was punished. Another point is, even fine, he had to be in Haran. He didn't necessarily have to agree that he's going to work for 7 years for Rachel and then another 7 years, as it turned out, for Leah. He was the one who proposed the 7 years after all. He could have proposed less. And then there's also the fact we see that at the end he didn't leave right away when Yosef was born. Lavan convinced him to stay, and he ended up staying another 6 years. And now, on top of it, we're saying that he spent 2 years getting home. So in other words, there's the idea, the various mephoshim talk about these various details. It comes out that Yaakov was willing to delay. He's not in that much of a hurry to get home and be able to do kibud avei. So therefore, like even the times that he had to stay away, for example, necessarily he has to be in Beis El for a while to bring karbonos, but nevertheless, all of that is held against him because we can see from the way that he was acting that he wasn't that he wasn't in that much of a hurry to get home and resume kibud avei. Okay. Hadron Aloch Megillah Nikris. The next parak over here, we're going to continue on the dinim of laying in the Megillah, which we talked about it was back on Daf Dalad, Daf Hey, and then we had digressions from there until now on different other topics. So now we're getting back to the Megillah. The Mishnah says, HaKoreis HaMegillah L'Mafreya,
if a person reads the Megillah backwards or out of order, lo yotze, then he's not yotze. There's also the famous vote from the Baal Shem Tov on this, that if a person reads the Megillah as if it's just something that happened back in the past and not something that continues to be relevant nowadays, then he's not yotze. Continues the Mishnah, kra al peh, if he reads the Megillah by heart, or kra targum, or if he reads it in targum, in Aramaic, b'chol loshen, or in any other language, lo yotze, then he's not yotze. But you are allowed to read it to people who speak a foreign language. You're allowed to read it to them in their language. Now, the Gemara is going to ask later on Daf Yud Ches, but one second, we just said you're not allowed to read it b'chol loshen. Now we're saying you are allowed to read it b'chol loshen. So we'll see about that in the Gemara of Es Hashem. And the Mishnah continues, about lawyers, Shoshama Ashuris Yotza. If a person knows a different language, he doesn't know Lashon Kodesh, and he hears it read in Lashon Kodesh, Yotza, then he's still Yotza, even though he doesn't understand it. There is, by the way, a machlokas we're showing him when we're saying that you're allowed to read it for lawyers as in laws. So what about if does that apply only to a person who doesn't know Lashon Kodesh? Or let's say, for example, if we're saying, apparently the Mishnah seems to be saying that, let's say for English speakers, you'd be allowed to read the Megillah in English. We'll talk about the details of that din on Daf Yud Ches Yud Tes. So does that mean that only that a person would yotze only if he only knows English and doesn't know Lashon Kodesh? Or would it even work for somebody who knows both English as well as Lashon Kodesh? So that Yavam Achloikus, we showed him about that. Lamai says, we're going to get to in the Gemara, eventually we don't really do that nowadays to lay in the Megillah in different languages for reasons that we're going to talk about later on. The Mishnah continues. Cross Sirugin, if a person read the Megillah piecemeal, so like he reads a little and then pauses and then reads more later, umisnamnim, or if he reads it while he's napping, and so like he's half asleep but he's reading it, yotze, so he's still yotze. Hoya Kosva, if he's writing the Megillah and in the course of writing it he's reading off the Megillah, which we'll see in the Gemara, that we're talking about. He's writing from a sample. He has another completely written Megillah in front of him, and he's copying from it to write a new Megillah. So each time as he writes a word, he's saying it. So then, Dersha, or if he's Darshan in the Megillah, if he's reading a Pasuk and then giving Drushas on it, like we had in the previous Perek, and continuing, so he's reading all the words in the Megillah, but in between he's interrupting with Drushas, or Umagiha, or he's proofreading a Megillah, so he's saying the words as he proofreads them. Im Kibin Liba Yotza, then if he has Kavana, then he's Yotza. Vim Lab Lo Yotza, and if not, then he's not Yotza. Now, you have a Gemara in other places talks about the question of mitzvahs tzrichas kavana. We learned about it in Masech to Rosh Hashanah, for example, where you have machlokas whether mitzvahs tzrichas kavana or not. So one possibility is our Mishnah goes according to the opinion that mitzvahs tzrichas kavana, and you actually have to have kavana in order to be yotze. Another possibility, different mefoshim talk about different possibilities. Another possibility is we mean that maybe the Megillah is special, since the purpose of reading it is Pursume Nissa, then you have to be having in mind the actual nest that happened in order to be Yotze. And the third possibility is that we're talking about over here, Kivin Libay doesn't mean that he's Mechavin to be Yotze the Mitzvah, but that he's Mechavin to pronounce the words properly. The Gemara, in fact, points this out elsewhere, that Magia, not always are you going to be reading the words properly, because you're reading the words more of like phonetically in order to catch any mistakes, chaseiras or yiseiras or whatever. So therefore, so if you're reading it like that, then you're not necessarily going to be yotze, because you're not pronouncing the words properly. But if he's actually pronouncing the words properly, then he can be yotze, even though he's not intending to fulfill the mitzvah. So those are the various possibilities in that. Next, continues the Mishnah, Hosek Suva Basam, if the Megillah is written with Sam, which is a reddish pigment, or with Sikra, or actually Sam is a yellowish one, or with Sikra, or with a red dye, or with Kumus, or with gum from a tree, or with Kankantoim, which is a stuff that's used to blacken shoes, we're going to have in the Gemara, is going to define all those, so if it's written with the wrong kind of ink, or if it's written ala niyor, if it's written on paper or papyrus, vala diftera, or if it's written on parchment that hasn't been completely tanned, you have those different stages of making parchment. There's a stage before it's completed where it's called diftera. So if you wrote a Megillah on that, lo yotza, then you're not yotza. Adjitek, sovashuris, ala sefer, ubedyoy, it has to be written in ksavashuri, it has to be written on a sefer, meaning on a parchment scroll, ubedyoy, and with ink. That's valid for writing Sifrei Torah and the other things. Tosfos later on Daf Yud Tes gets into a bit of discussion what kind of ink exactly is kosher for that purpose. So we'll talk about it then. We'll talk about it in connection with that. That's Hashem. This that we're saying that it has to be written Ashuris, by the way, Does that mean that, now we just said before that you can read the Megillah for lawyers, for example, people who only know English, you can read it for them in English, and yeah, we're saying that you have, yeah, the Gemara is going to explain that we're talking about where the Megillah itself was written in that language. Does that mean that when we say it has to be written Ashuris, does that mean that even if it's written in English, it would still have to be written in Hebrew characters, which would mean, in other words, that if you were to write a Megillah like that, it would mean you'd actually have to write on parchment, in Hebrew letters, and it was in the days, etc. Or does it mean that for each language you have to use that language's script? So for English, you'd have to use English lettering. So for that, again, that you have a machlokas rishonim about which one is correct. Lamaisi, you don't really see people doing that nowadays, which is why we don't read. You know, nobody writes a Megillah. Nobody writes a Megillah in English on parchment, whether in Ksav Ashuri or whether in English. Or whether in English letters, therefore, that's one reason why we don't have this thing nowadays of laying the Megillah in a foreign language. We're just laying it in Lashon Kodesh, and that's that. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, Menahani Mili. We said in the Mishnah that if you lay in the Megillah out of order, you're not Yotze. How do we know that? Because the Pasuk says that you have to celebrate Purim the way it's written and according to their time. The times can't be backwards. You can't have the 15th of Adar before the 14th, for example. The same way the written text of the Megillah can't be out of order. What do you mean? That doesn't work. The Pasuk doesn't mention, that Pasuk doesn't say anything about reading the Megillah. That Pasuk that says is talking about doing the mitzvah supporting. It says to do these 2 days of Purim. So where does that teach us anything about the dinim of laying the Megillah? Rather, from another pasuk, right after that, this is benasim, where it says these days are remembered and done. So in that way, the pasuk is making a hekesh between the remembering, which we do by reading the story of the Megillah, we remember the details of the story, and the doing. So just like, again, the doing can't be done out of order because you can't do things on the 15th before you do them on the 14th. Or the Rashash says it means even within a certain activity. You have a certain activity that has different steps in it and you can't do them out of order. You can't do them out of order. It won't make sense to you. The same way the Zechira, the reading of the Megillah, cannot be out of order. So that's where we learn it from. So the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a Braisa, v'chein b'halal, v'chein b'kriyah shema b'tefillah. The same thing is true of Halal, that you can't say it out of order. The same thing is true of Kriyah Shema, that you can't say it out of order. And the same thing is true of Tefillah, meaning Shemin Esrei, that you have to say the brachas in order. So let's go through Halal Menalon. Where do we know that din applies to Halal? Rabba Omer Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Mimizrach Shemesh Ad Mevoyel. Halal starts off by saying, from the rising of the sun to the setting of it, Hashem's name is praised. So that means, in other words, just like sunrise and sunset are not going to be out of order, they go in that order and they go in that order. The sun rises and then it sets, and then they go where they are. The same way, Mahulol Shem Hashem, the same way the name of Hashem has to be praised in Halal, in order, not out of order. Rabbi Yosef says a different pasuk in Halal. Zehayim osa Hashem. This is the day that Hashem made. Again, the hours of a day go in a certain order. So that implies, therefore, that the words of Halal also have to go in a certain order. Rabbi Ivya Amar Yehi Shem Hashem Mevorach. Rabbi Ivya learns it from the words Yehi Shem Hashem Mevorach. May the name of Hashem be blessed. Meaning Yehi implies that it should be Kava Yosei in the order in which we have it in the pesukim, not out of order. Because the Pasuk says Hashem's name should be blessed from now and forever, and therefore, since now, just like now comes before forever, therefore it means the same way Halal has to be in order. So from any of these psukim, we have the proof that Halal has to be said in the order in which it's written in Sefer Tehillim. Next, Krishma. Where do we see that Krishma has to be said in order? By the way, when we say in order, the Rambam learns that this doesn't apply to the Parashiyos. If you said the Parashiyos out of order, then the Rambam says it's not so bad because, after all, it doesn't say them. They're not in order in the Torah anyway. They're not adjacent to one another in the Torah anyway. So therefore, if you say them out of order, it's not so bad. A number of Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that, and because, after all, the Mishnah and the Gemara and Brachas give us reasons why the Parashiyos are in the order that they are. First, you have to accept El Shemayim, then El Mitzvahs, then you have then Vayomer only applies by day. So therefore, that's a reason to say that they must be said in order. Okay, So anyway, but within each parasha, definitely we're saying over here, it has to be said in order. So how do we know? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Kriyishma Kaksava Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says that Kriyishma has to be said as it's written, meaning in Lashon Kodesh. V'chamam v'chol Lashon. V'cham say you can say Shema in any language. So my time of the Rebbe, why does Rebbe say that Shema has to be dafka in Lashon Kodesh? Omakra, because the Pasuk says V'hoyu. The Pasuk says that the words of Shema should be, meaning Bahava Yasin you, they have to be in their original form, which is in Lashon Kodesh. But Rabbanan my timer. So we're going to get to, as we go through this discussion, we're going to see where we see about Lamafreya. So Rabbanan my timer, where do we see that why do the Chachamim disagree and say that Shema can be written in any language, can be said in any language? Omakro Shema, because the Pasuk says listen, which also means pay attention, meaning b'chol loshen shata shemeya, any language that you can understand, you can say Shema. So the question is, Rebbe Nami Hoksib Shema, what is Rebbe doing with the word Shema? And the answer is, Ahumi Boyle Hashmeya la Oznecha, Mashata Moitzimi Picha. You have to make your ears hear what your mouth is saying. So you can't just mouth the words of Shema. You have to say them loud enough that at least you yourself can hear them. But Rabbanan, now that Rabbanan disagree with that, because Sabri, they hold Commander Omer, Akores Shema, Velashmi la Ozne Yotze. They actually learn like the opinion in the Mishnah in Brachos that if you didn't hear the words that you're saying, you just mouth them, then you're Yotze. So therefore, they don't need the word Shema for that Drasha. Therefore, they have it available for the Drasha about that you can say Shema in any language. So what about Rabbanan Nami Hoksiv Vahoyu? What about what are the Chachamim doing with Rebbe's word Vahoyu? And that's where this comes in. They say that we learn from that you don't say the words of Shema out of order. So where does Rebbe learn that from? He says midvarim hadvarim, because in the pasuk there it says vahoyu hadvarim eila. It didn't have to say hadvarim. It could have said vahoyu dvarim eila. And since it says hadvarim, then we can darshan from that it means that they also have to be in this order. But Rabbanan dvarim hadvarim like mashmalahu, the chachamim don't hold that's a valid basis for drasha. But in any case, we see that both Rebbe and the Chachamim agree that Shema can be said, that Shema cannot be said out of order. Rebbe learns it from Vahoyu, Rebbe learns that you can't read L'mafreya from the Hey of Hadvarim, and the Chachamim learn it from the word, and the Chachamim learn it from the word Vahoyu. So that's where we get that you have to say Shema in order. So the Gemara says, by the way, Lema Kasava Rebbe Kol HaTorah Kula B'chol Lashon Nemra. Does this mean, this machloikus of Rebbe and the Chachamim, does this mean that Rebbe holds that the Torah was said in any language? Now, what does that mean? Said in any language? There you have a few explanations. Rashi says that it means that you would be allowed to read the Torah in any language. And therefore, according to Rebbe, the Chiddush is by Shema, you can't do that. You definitely have to say it in Lashon Kodesh. Tosfos asks, one second, where do we have Kriyas HaTorah D'Oraisa anyway? The only one we have really is Parshas Zohar. So therefore, Tosfos says, what we mean is not reading the Torah in public, but rather the various other things where the Torah tells us to say certain words, for example, by Chalitza and Egla Arufa and so forth. So it sounds like Rebbe is saying that all of those could be said in other languages, and only Shema, because it says Vahoyu, it doesn't have to be in Lashon Kodesh. Then there's a few other explanations of other Rishonim, what B'chol Lashon Nemra means. It means when Moshe first taught the Torah to the Jewish people. Did he teach it only in Lashon Kodesh, or did he teach it in the other languages as well? Because after all, they had Gerim among them. They had the Eid of Rav, who are not necessarily going to understand Lashon Kodesh. So did Moshe teach them the Torah in their own language or not? And therefore, the question would be, can we Yotze limit our Torah by learning in other languages? And yet another explanation is that the question is, if you write a Sefer Torah in a different language, does it have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah? If we say that the Torah was said B'chol Lashon, then it would mean that yes, if you say that the Torah is only said B'Lashon Kodesh, then a Sefer Torah written in any other language wouldn't have that kind of Kedusha. Anyway, so Rebbe seems to be holding that the rest of the Torah is valid in other languages, and only by Shema not. If Rebbe actually held that the Torah as a whole was given to be read only in Lashon Kodesh, then why would you need to write the word Vahoyu? It would mean the whole Torah is already in Lashon Kodesh. Shema is part of the Torah. So therefore, you wouldn't need the word Vahoyu. And the answer is that doesn't prove anything. It's true. You could say Rebbe holds that the Torah was given in other languages, or that it was given in Lashon Kodesh. But you still need the word Bahayu. Otherwise, you would think Darshan the word Shema the way the Chachamim do, that you can say it in any language. So therefore, Rebbe would say that's why it has to say Bahayu. So it has no bearing on the question of whether the Torah was given in one language or in all the languages. Now, what about the other way around? Lema kasavri rabbanon kol haTorah b'lashon haKodesh nemra. Does it mean that the Chachamim hold that the rest of the Torah was given in Lashon Kodesh, meaning that you can't be yotze yuchiyuv, or according to the various explanations that we just said, that the Torah written in other languages doesn't have the same degree of kedusha? Because we can ask the opposite question as Rebbe. We can ask the opposite question on them. If they hold the whole Torah was given b'chol loshen, then why do we need the word Shema specially to say that over here you can say Shema in any language that you understand? Doesn't that mean that they hold the rest of the Torah is only b'loshen hakodesh, and here the Torah is making an exception? And the answer is no. It's true. No, we would say, according to them, you need the word Shema, Sakrat Chamina, Bahoyu, Kerebi, because otherwise you would think to learn the word Bahoyu the way Rebbe does, that means that it's valid, that it's only valid in Lashon Kodesh. So Kosev Rachmana Shema, therefore the Pasuk says Shema. So again, there's no proof of what the Chachamim hold as far as that Macholotus of whether the Torah is given only B'Lashon HaKodesh or in the other languages as well. In any case, that takes care of how we know that Shema has to be said in order, and if you say the Psukim out of order, you're not Yotze. A nafkamina, by the way, as far as that, and as far as the Megillah, is that if you missed a Pasuk, or if you're not sure if you missed a Pasuk, you can't just say that Pasuk. Wherever you are, you have to actually go back to where that Pasuk or where that word belongs and read from there. Next, Tefillah Minalon. Where do we know that Shemina Esrei has to be said in order? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Shemina Pekuli. Shimon Pekuli, that was his name. Rashi says one possibility is that Pekula means cotton. So it means that he used to earn his parnasa by dealing in cotton. There's actually a vote someplace in Kisvei HaRizal that Pekuli is also Meloshin Nofak, Meloshin Poku Plilia, which is associated with Gehenim. So it means this is a person who had the ability to schlep people out of Gehenim. Anyway. He arranged the order of the 18 brachas in Yavne in front of Rav Gamliel. And so therefore the brachas have an order, as we're now going to discuss in the Gemara, and we're going to say why each bracha is in the order it's in, therefore you can't say them out of order. Rabbi Yechanan actually says, but Amilah Masnei Satana. Others say we learn in a Braisa May of Esri Miskanim that it was much earlier than Rav Gamliel, 120 Miskanim, the Anshek Nesak Dela, Urahem Kamen Neviim, and there were a number of Neviim among them, including Chage, Schaya, Malachi, Ezra, Mordechai, etc. Tiknu Shemona Esrei Brachas Ala Seder. They arranged the 18 Brachas of Shemona Esrei in the order that we have them. So in that case, the Gemara is going to ask later on, so what do we need Shimon HaPekuli for? And the answer is one of these things where they forgot what the proper order should be, and Shimon HaPekuli reestablished the order. So let's go through Tanan Abanan. Minayin Sha'imrim Ovois. How do we know to start with that you have to say a bracha of Ovois at the beginning of Shimon Esrei? Shenema, Hobol Hashem B'nei Eilim. As the Pasuk says, give to Hashem, you who are the sons of the mighty ones. Elim can mean the mighty ones, like Ves Elia Oretz, Rashi brings the pasuk. So Hovul Hashem Bnei Elim literally means give to Hashem the sons of the Elim, meaning give to Hashem, mention to Hashem the Elim, the powerful ones of the world, meaning Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So therefore, you start off with that. How do we know that next you say the bracha about Hashem's power? Shenema Hovul Hashem covered by. The pasuk continues, give to Hashem strength and power. Give to Hashem honor and power. How do we know that next you say the bracha of after Kodesh? Shenema, because the next pasuk continues, Hovul Hashem kvod shmoi, give to Hashem the honor of his name. Hishtachvul Hashem behadras Kodesh, bow to Hashem in the glory of holiness. So we see that you next have to have a bracha talking about the holiness and the greatness of Hashem's name, which is what we say after Kodesh, Hashem Kodesh. Next, Umaro Loma Bina Achakusha. Why did the Chachamim set up? First, we say in the Anshek Nesagdola. Later on, we're saying Shimon Apkuli reestablished it. So, why do we have next the bracha of Atachoinen? Is right after Kedusha. Shenemar, as you have a pasuk, the Kedushu Eskadosh Yaakov, they will make holy the Holy One of Yaakov, and they will exalt the God of Israel, the Samechlei, and the next pasuk continues. The Yadu Soye Ruach Bina. The next pasuk continues. Those who are confused in their spirit will know understanding. So therefore, so as soon as we talk about the greatness and the about the kedusha of Hashem's name, therefore, right after that, we have to daven about the Yadu Soye Ruach Bina, that those who are confused should have a spirit of understanding, and that's the bracha atachon. Next, Umar Rolam Tshuva Achabina. Why is the next bracha after that the bracha about tshuva, about the bracha Ashivenu? Because you have another pasuk in Yeshaya, his heart will understand this shav and he'll do tshuva, the rafalai, and it will be healed for him. So we see that as soon as he understands, then the next thing is the shav that he does tshuva. So the question is, yehochi lemir refuah basra. In that case, then right after Ashivenu should come the bracha of refuenu. Why do we put slach lanu and re'enu v'anyenu in between? The answer is lema refuah basra de tshuva. The answer is lo sakadai. You can't think that way. Dichtiv v'yoshev el Hashem v'yirachamehu. Another pasuk in Yeshaya says, let him return to Hashem and he will have rachmanis on him. Ve'elavakenu ki yav v'leslayach. Let him return to Hashem and because he forgives Allah. So we see that right after tshuva comes slicha. So Gemara says, "My chaz samchasaha smoychaha." In that case, if you have two psukim, one pasuk that implies that right after tshuva you have refuah, and another pasuk that implies that right after tshuva you have slicha. So why are we preferring the one pasuk over another? Why are we saying that better to? Why are we saying better to leave refa'enu for later and do slach lanu right after tshuva? Why is the one pasuk stronger than the other? The reason is because you have another pasuk that says hasileach l'chol aveinechi, Hashem forgives all your averus, harofe l'chol tachloichi, Hashem forgives all of your sicknesses, and then it continues hagoyo mishachas chayoichi, Hashem redeems your life from the pit. So remember, the geula and refuah basa slicha. So that tells us that geula and refuah take place after slicha. So the question is, what are you doing after all with the pasuk that says he'll return to Hashem and he'll be healed, which seems to imply a direct connection between returning to Hashem, between tshuva and healing? And the answer is, ahu lav refuah de tachluim hi ela refuah de slicha. The answer is that's not talking about a refuah of sicknesses. The pasuk, the shavah rafaloi, is referring to the refuah that a person has from his averus, a ruchniyistika healing. So therefore, slach lanu does fit very well after the bracha hashivein. Okay, we'll continue with the rest of Shemana. We'll continue with the rest of the order of Shemana Esrei tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Yashikayach.